Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jason, how you doing? And thanks for giving us a couple of minutes of your time.
My pleasure. I'm doing all right. A little tired, I must confess. A little disappointed that there weren't more trades consummated, because there certainly was plenty of conversations and groundwork being laid, really going all the way back to the beginning of the month. But I think when you look at it through the prism of the season, like going back to Jadeveon Clowney and that trade, saw a lot of movement. And the league is changing, and people are becoming a little less risk-averse and a little more willing to move assets around and try to be bold to do things. And we saw a lot of significant trades. We just didn't see any in the last, well, I shouldn't say any in the last 40 hours, any in the last 24. The Leonard Williams trade, we'll see. Obviously the most significant trade made this week, but there were a few made last week that could have big ramifications too. I mean, heck, Emmanuel Sanders and Mohamed Sanu might be facing each other in the Super Bowl. Who knows?
Yeah, that's right. And the Patriots needed a tight end. They got Sanu, we understand, but they needed a tight end. Did they come close to getting one today?
Well, they were a little hamstrung by cap space. You know, they have, and the guy would have made the most sense for them is Tyler Eifert, who only cost $1 million and is a pure rental. The Cincinnati Bengals, they just they're their own planet, man.
And now they're benching Dalton, right?
Right. So if you're doing that, why would you not then jumpstart your rebuild around whoever the next quarterback is? If it's Finley, great. If it's whoever you take first overall, great. But they need players around them, and you don't have players, and you don't have picks, and you're clinging to dear life to a bunch of 32-year-olds. It makes zero sense in the world, but that's where they are. And then, you know, other options, I think, you know, they certainly have reached out to Tampa about Cam Brate and O.J. Howard. Cam Brate would be a little bit tougher from a cap standpoint. O.J. Howard would make sense, but they obviously couldn't come to terms there. And Tampa, as much as he hasn't produced to this point, they obviously took him very high.
Jason, let me ask you about what you alluded to with Leonard Williams yesterday, 24 hours ago. Nobody here is surprised that he was dealt.
Right.
That had been quite rumored, but were you surprised he was dealt from the Jets to the Giants?
Yes. Yeah, I was stunned. And by the return as well. For a 2-6 team to give up that for a look-see at a guy who, I mean, I talked to a lot of GMs the last couple of weeks, and I talked to, specifically last week, a lot of GMs who were very eager to make a move, who felt like a defensive lineman was a prime need and could put them over the top. And these are guys who have a pretty good track record, and none of them had any interest in Leonard Williams, even with the Jets taking all money, which I reported all the way back in week 5, that they were willing to eat money to trade this guy. They didn't like the film. They didn't like the productivity. They didn't want him. And so for a 2-6 team to then pay seemingly a premium to get him,
so the
it's bizarre to me. It really is. It's bizarre to me.
So the Giants were the only team.
Well, I don't know about the only team, but clearly nobody else was in that range for him. Like, would somebody have looked at him as a salary dump and say, all right, you eat some money and we'll take a flyer on him, a good team, and we'll give you a fifth? Yeah, but a 3 and a 5.
And he's a free agent at the end of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, and how good is he going to look, you know, 8 weeks on a very bad defense? So I don't think he's going to get there and be like, oh, yeah, this is where I have to be. I don't know that he's going to do a whole lot to increase his market value. And coming off a $14 million salary, he was always going to be kind of a different case. So I don't know, buddy. Like, that one has baffled a lot of people in the league. I'll put it that way.
And a lot of Giants fans are baffled by Dave Gettleman.
He's, look, they've gone out there on a limb in numerous instances now, and it remains to be seen whether they were, you know, smarter than the pack or whether the pack was right. But that, to me, is not a team that's close to turning the corner.
All right, maybe you can help us solve this puzzle because we don't know what to believe. Jamal Adams of the Jets, he says that his agent informed him, told him that, yes, the Jets were shopping him. And then later this afternoon, we heard from Douglas, the Jets GM, that he wasn't shopping Douglas or Bell. What are your thoughts?
I think they absolutely were shopping Le'Veon Bell. I think they were looking for somebody to give them value and take the contract. The problem was that those options didn't really exist.
What about Adams?
No, Adams. I don't believe that they were holding an auction for Adams or trying to move him. But you have to understand, if you're Joe Douglas and you do want to move Robbie Anderson, and you did just move Leonard Williams, and in a perfect world somebody gives you a two for Le'Veon Bell, then you're having a lot of conversations. And as you're having these conversations, the other teams are like, well, hey, dude, we see where you're coming from, but, like, you don't have a lot of tradable commodities. You know what I mean? We're not interested in giving you, you know, a six for, Tremaine Johnson or whatever. Mm-hmm. The player we like is Jamal Adams. And then he's not doing his job, especially given the dire straits that team's in, if he doesn't at least see if somebody wants to go crazy like the Texans did for Laremy Tunsil or like the Rams did for Jalen Ramsey. So I can't begrudge him that. And I understand where Jamal's coming from also. But the way the Johnsons have set that thing up, it's easier to be dysfunctional than functional. And this was always going to be a bit of a crossroads for them, given the slow start. And, I mean, Joe Douglas was not pushing to move Jamal Adams. I don't think there's ever a time where Joe Douglas thought he was going to trade Jamal Adams, but when some teams are asking about him, mm-hmm. and particularly a team like Dallas that thinks they're maybe a player away and an owner who's not getting any younger, who thinks this is his best chance to win a Super Bowl since, you know, he had his falling out with Jimmy Johnson, you got to at least go down that road a little bit to find out where it could lead.
See, we had heard not only Dallas, but also Baltimore.
I don't think it got as far with Baltimore as it did with Dallas, but you got to understand, Joe Douglas spent a bulk of his career in Baltimore. And, you know, the Ravens didn't have much cap space. The Ravens were going to do something significant. It had to be for somebody still on his rookie deal. And those two teams were going to be talking. It just made sense. So, you know, again, I think we get caught up in the distinction between who called who or whatever. I mean, mm-hmm. teams are trying to get better, and you know what? You got to talk about players a lot of times to try to get better. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I do think it matters because of the conversations they had with Adams, and I truly don't think they had an intention to trade him. But if a team, you know what I mean, if a team is asking about him, and it's particularly a team that thinks they're going to win a Super Bowl, what are you going to say? He's absolutely positively untouchable. I mean, Babe Ruth got traded. Wayne Gretzky got traded. You know what I mean? Like, Odell got traded not that long ago. Like, I mean, it's part of the business.
And what's wrong with Odell and the Browns?
Oof. I mean, the first 7 weeks was always going to be tough. I mean, that they played a real big-time schedule with a lot of people figuring out themselves and figuring out each other. At the same time, we're going to find out. I mean, they should make quick work of, you know, Brandon Allen and the Denver Broncos. And then they've got must-win games coming up against Buffalo and Baltimore. They have to at least split those games. If they sweep them, they're right back in the hunt in the wild card and the division in the AFC. Because that, just look around at the AFC. I mean, there's not a lot of great teams. I think as they're constructed, they should be able to beat the bad teams, and they're going to have to beat a few good teams. And I kind of feel like that was always going to be their, you know, the way things played out for them. I don't think they played terribly against the Patriots by any stretch once they fell behind 17-0. And honestly, some of the runs where they turned the ball over, they were dominating the Patriots. It's just those plays were ending in fumbles. And they pushed New England around pretty good. You're just not going to go into Foxborough against that team and that defense down 17-0 with the wind blowing sideways and beat them. But I don't think they're as horrible as some people think by any stretch.
You touch on the Rams. It made me think of them moving Talib to Miami. Why is Miami picking up a player and not getting rid of anybody that can play football?
Well, they've pretty much gotten rid of everybody who anybody wanted. I mean, if you want to say they should have traded Devontae Parker too, I'll give you that. But I don't think they could have got more than a 5 or 6 for him. And at this point, as long as they've stuck with him, you know, they've got enough 5s and 6s rolling around there between comp picks and some of the other trades that they've made. They tore it down to the studs, and I applaud them for acknowledging who they are and doing everything they could to try to position themselves to get out of this 6-win to 9-win death spiral they've been in for 20 years and actually be a real contender. I mean, Talib, they basically paid $4.5 million for a 5th-round pick. I mean, that's what it was. Aqib Talib is not, I mean, he's along for the ride. He'll never play a snap for the Miami Dolphins. He'll be on IR. They'll cut him after the year. And they'll take that extra 5th-round pick and hope it turns into somebody who can contribute to them for peanuts. But that's all that was. That was a cash and cap space move. That was a dump. That wasn't a trade. That wasn't a transaction. The player was just a contract.
On the line with us is NFL insider Jason Locke on 4Radio.com, Sports NFL Insider. What surprises you more, Jason, the Falcons being 1-7 or the 49ers being 7-0?
49ers being 7-0, I thought they'd be improved. I thought the defense was pretty good last year, but the offense was so bad that it was hard to sometimes suss it out unless you were watching them closely. And then you add a Bosa and some of the other things they did. But I didn't think they'd be 7-0. I got to be honest with you, especially in that division, which is really tough. Atlanta, they started really slow last year. And Dirk Cutter, I'm sorry, was not going to get Matt Ryan playing like he did the second year under Kyle Shanahan. And I always felt like they overestimated their own talent. They overpaid their own talent. And they they overassessed too much blame last year to injuries. And so, no, I'm not shocked. I thought they wouldn't be very good. I didn't think they'd make the playoffs. I thought they'd be, you know, a 6 or 7 win team. I thought they would feast early because these are the games they should have won. The problem for Atlanta is the schedule really starts now. I mean, go look at the gauntlet they play the next few weeks. I mean, starting with that Seattle game, it's bad. I mean, they've got the Rams, and then they've got the Seahawks twice. They've got the 49ers twice. Like, they're in deep trouble. I thought they'd start off a little quicker but not be a very good team and then get pretty much run the second half of the year. So, yeah.
I mean, they can't stop anyone. I mean, they didn't have Matt Ryan this weekend. They had Chubb, and he threw for almost 500 yards. Almost, I think it was 470, 480 in that neighborhood. And 4 touchdown passes. Julio Jones caught 10 passes for well over 100 yards. But their defense, Jason,
they can't stop anyone. They played against a disinterested team, sitting back and playing, you know, cover 4 in the second half, up 27-0. I mean, they called off the dogs. I think Pete Carroll felt bad for his old buddy Dan Quinn, and they called off the dogs. I mean, it was 27-0 at the half. The game was over. And that's been the story of Atlanta. Their scoring differential in the first half is minus 94. I mean, we're only through half a season. Like, the game's over before it starts there. They don't come out to play. They get beat up physically. They get run over, and then they accumulate a lot of yardage and faux points when in garbage time. But that trust me, him throwing for 500 yards isn't the story of the game. The story of the game is the stadium's empty again at halftime, and they're down 27-0.
Yeah, and how about the Colts? Do they miss Andrew Luck? I mean, Brissett has done a pretty good job, Chase.
Done a very good job. He's one of the top 3, I think, in touchdown passes. He is steady most of the time, and he is special when it really counts. He's made enough special plays that win them games and not just keep them in games. They don't beat themselves. Incredibly well coached, fundamentally sound, very aggressive. They got a forward thinking play caller and head coach in Frank Reich. And they don't care about the nobody there cares about the box score. They don't play hero ball. nobody's wrapped up in what this means for my next contract or what, you know, how many highlights I'm going to make or, you know what I mean, who's going to dap me up after the game. They just collectively care about winning, and it shows. They're a tough team, man. They're going to be interesting in January.
Well, is Frank there, is Frank Wright in Indianapolis as good an innovator, as good an offensive mind, as good a head coach as Adam Gase of the New York Jets?
Well, I mean, look, they're different scenarios there. The Jets, I talked about the Browns having to beat some bad teams. They ran the gauntlet early. Mm-hmm. The first half was always going to be tough. Now, some of these wounds are self-inflicted, not everything. I don't know that it had to be necessarily this tough, but when you've got the situation with Sam and the spleen and the mono and everything, mm-hmm. We'll see, man. We'll see if they can hit the reboot button and at least be competitive, in their weight class and around their weight class. And you know, they punched above their weight class once, obviously, with Dallas. But I guess there's nowhere to go but up at this point.
You know, I mean, Adam Gase did not win and did not make a lot of friends in Miami. He comes to the New York Jets. And granted, you have to have personnel. You have to have players. The Jets and Giants, too, don't have anything for an offensive line. Don't have anyone who can harass and get close to even breathe heavy on quarterbacks. The bottom line is, what has Adam Gase shown you for what you have seen with the Jets? What we're trying to figure out, watching him every single week here, what it is about him that is a strength. Now, again, you have to qualify any remarks you make because they haven't got a great roster, that's for sure. But what is it about Adam Gase that leads you to believe he is a quarterback whisperer?
Well, I mean, what he did with the second and third string quarterbacks wasn't great, but what was it going to be? I mean, they haven't had the tight end all year. They don't have an offensive line. I think he should lean on Le'Veon Bell more than he does, but I don't know how pretty it was going to look with anybody pulling the strings. Mm-hmm. I think that's just the reality of the hand that they were dealt on offense, especially, again, with Sam missing half of the first half.
Last week
wasn't good enough, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And look, play calling and quarterback development, that was obviously his hallmark. I mean, Jay Cutler had the best season he's ever had there. You know, this is a guy who was a part of devising schemes to win and win consistently with Tim Tebow. You know, he's done really good work in multiple places. Miami did not go well, and this is not a good start by any stretch of the imagination. But it's also, you know, mm-hmm. What is it, 7 games? Because they had the bye already, right? Have they even played 8?
Right.
What are they, 1-6?
They're 1-6.
So,
go ahead.
We'll see. You know what I mean? We'll see. I mean, the story isn't written yet, but there's also no way to couch this beginning as anything other than difficult, and they're a tough watch. They've been a tough watch a lot of times this year. That's just the reality. We'll see where they go from here.
A couple of years ago in the draft, there was Sam Darnold, there was Josh Allen, there was Josh Rosen, there was Baker Mayfield. Are you going to be surprised when all is said and done, Jason, that maybe Lamar Jackson turns out to be the best quarterback of them all?
Well, I'd be surprised. No, I mean, I think you can go back to anything I'm documented about the kid leading up to that draft, some of the teams that were interested in that draft, and then everything I reported and wrote about how seismic I thought he would be in reviving a Ravens franchise that was starting to lose its foothold in this. I mean, I live in Baltimore. Like, it was, people were not going to games. People were selling their PSLs. People mm-hmm. were done with watching mm-hmm. Joe Flacco throw the ball 4 yards downfield, mm-hmm. you know, 50 times a game. So, no, I'm not surprised. I thought the kid had immense talent, and I thought that the way that they were holistically building the entire franchise around him, once they did turn it over to him and everything they did in the offseason and getting Marty Morningweg out of there and letting Greg Roman take over the offense and adding the pieces they did in the draft, I bought in big time. I thought the kid could be an MVP candidate, and through half a season, he is. He's a special kid, great. Just people gravitate to him. He's always smiling. Mm-hmm. He loves life. He loves football. He's a hard, incredibly hard worker who's gotten better every year he's been doing this. And people, he's still 22 years old. You know, he's like a Juan Soto, you know what I mean? And a lot of kids his age would be playing single-A baseball. He came in under incredible duress last year with the franchise crumbling at 4-5 off a couple of losses and him being in the hospital that week and missing practice time, being on an IV and coming out and leading them to the division crown. Nah, he's got something, man. And he was a lot better passer than people gave him credit for last year. If you really watched every single game, every single snap, and he's obviously proven people wrong this year. No, I'm a big Lamar guy. I if they can keep him healthy, and I get it, takes too many hits. They run him too much at times, yada, yada. I get all that. But he's also really good at avoiding hits. He's learned how to slide. He doesn't turn the corner and try to get down the sideline anymore. He turns the corner and gets out of bounds, and that's a smart thing to do. I'm excited to see his career unfold.
And the best team in the NFC, is it Green Bay or New Orleans?
I think it's New Orleans. I do. I just think they've you know, there's still some newness to Green Bay. Matt LaFleur has never gone through the gauntlet of the postseason as the man anywhere. And, you know, Sean Payton is unflappable. They just got their quarterback back. They're going to get Jared Cook back and Alvin Kamara after the bye. I like their play calling. I like everything about the Saints. And they're incredibly uniquely driven after the way last season ended. So no, I like their offensive line. I like their defensive line, and I like Green Bay's offensive and defensive line too. I just think the Saints are a little more tested. That they got a little more resolve, and I think they could beat you in different ways than maybe Green Bay can.
And, I mean, they finally got Breeze back, and he wins. Terry Bridgewater did such a terrific job. Did you happen to see the touchdown pass that Aaron Rodgers threw to Aaron Jones?
Yes.
Falling down, rolling to his right and falling down. How does he hit him in the corner of the end zone
crazy like
that?
No, I mean, that's you know, very few people in the history of the game can do that. You know, I think Patrick Mahomes could do that right now. Mm-hmm. Not too many others. No, look, Green Bay is certainly formidable, and I was a bit of a skeptic about them, and they've certainly proven me wrong through half a season. I like the totality of the New Orleans Saints coaching staff all the way across the board, experience, you know, playoff medal. Both teams have a nice home field advantage, but I would defer to that dome and just what that can do from a sound standpoint. I give the edge to the Saints.
Who do the Patriots play in the Super Bowl?
I would think the Saints. You know,
okay.
I think the Saints. I have concerns about New England. And they weren't able to buttress the offensive line or the tight end position at the deadline. And that gives me a little bit of pause. They are not very deep at a lot of key spots, you know. And the defense has been otherworldly. But the real test kind of starts now. And you saw what Cleveland did bullying them on the ground. They're only middle of the pack against the run, yards per attempt. And Cleveland clearly could run it on them. And I think, you know, Baltimore runs for 200 yards a game. Like, Baltimore's going to run the ball on them. And then after the bye, they've got Carson Wentz looming. They think it goes Wentz, Prescott, Mahomes, Deshaun Watson. So we'll see if the defense is that otherworldly against those sort of tests.
Philadelphia or Dallas?
Philadelphia.
And also the schedule at the end of the season favors them.
Yeah, I mean, they play each other one more time. Obviously, Dallas won the first meeting, but I like Carson Wentz more than Dak Prescott. I think the Eagles, Deshaun Jackson's getting close. I feel like they've already kind of survived and stayed afloat when they were truly, truly tested. And I still feel like that's coming for Dallas. I don't buy the Cowboys with big expectations against big teams. You know, usually when Jerry thinks they're great, when Jerry thinks they're on the cusp of a Super Bowl, turns out they weren't all that close.
All right.
I don't know about their pass rush. I have questions about their defense. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if they can keep the O-line together, because those guys are a little long in the tooth, and they've been banged up in recent years.
Okay, a final prediction that we'll let you go, Jason. A final prediction on the Jets taking on Miami this weekend. Who wins the game?
Miami's is kind of a dangerous team, man. They've hung in there in the first half against some teams that are definitely better than them. I'm not saying that they're juggernauts, but, you know, they hung in there against Dallas. I think since Fitzpatrick's gotten in there, he's given them new life. Now, they tend to wilt in the second half, and that talent discrepancy becomes an issue. But I don't know that they're going 0-16. I think the Bengals have a better shot of going 0-16 than them. And I think the real question is, can the Jets sweep them? And how will the Jets respond to all the sort of adversity and the quasi-dramas that we were talking about at the beginning of this interview? You know, sometimes it's about catching a team at the right time. And I think it's going to be a close game. I do.
All right. Jason, a million thanks for your time. Always appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
You have a good one. Thanks, buddy.
You bet.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.